You're tuned in to CITR Radio 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia, which is located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminen-speaking Musqueam people. You just heard the first episode of Wolf Tracks, a podcast series created by Chris Cardinal through UBC's First Nations and Indigenous Studies program. Up next is episode 2 in the series. Enjoy.
And welcome to Wolf Tracks here in UBC's CITR 101.9 FM. I am your host, Chris Cardinal. Recorded, processed, and produced right here in the beautiful unceded territories of the Hunkaminen-speaking peoples, this show is the second segment of a three-part podcast series addressing education. More specifically, I'm continuing to have conversations with guests who have taken at least one post-secondary course with an Aboriginal focus. And together we will discuss their backgrounds, experiences, and their thoughts of how Indigenous-focused courses can be a positive factor in changing the current discord by facilitating a better understanding between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people here in Canada. Now, moving on to the second chapter in the three-part Wolf Tracks podcast series, our second guest is Tatiana. Thank you for being with us today, Tatiana. Can you please tell us a little about yourself and where you come from?
So, muddy, hello. My name is Tatiana Zamorano. My family comes from the Mapuche Nation. We are Canadian-Chilean. A Chilean is what we call a mestiza and what here in Canada is called a Métis, where it is Spaniard and a Mapuche together. And my ancestral lands lie across the Andes from Chile all across to Argentina. And what's unique about my nation is that we don't have segregated nations. We're just all one. So we all fall under the same Mapuche nation.
That is really cool. How long have you been living in the Musqueam territory for?
Yeah, I've actually lived on the Musqueam territory for 25 years of my life. I've been disconnected from my ancestral lands and culture for about 27 years. And the reason behind that is because there was a lot of shame attributed to being Indigenous in Chile. And so my family suffered the effects of colonialism that conditioned them to not associate themselves with their indigeneity. So I've been disconnected for a very long time.
I see. Being in Vancouver, whether it be being on campus in the Lower Mainland, maybe in the city, do you see Vancouver as being a multicultural space?
I see Vancouver as a multicultural space, but to a certain extent, because there's still prominent racial discrimination and rejection to other cultures that is, it's hidden. So it is multicultural in the sense that, yes, there are a variety of different ethnicities and cultures that make up Vancouver, but I don't feel that it's multicultural in the way that it's embraced because of that silent rejection of the cultures.
How do you see Aboriginals being represented here in Vancouver?
With regards to that question, the thing is that I believe that Indigenous people are their own sovereign, or should be recognized as their own sovereign nations. I'd never put them under the category of multicultural because I don't feel that they are an ethnicity. They're a sovereign entity on its own. And so I don't include them in the multicultural aspect, especially since they've been here since time immemorial.
Absolutely. I could agree with that. It's been mentioned before that, you know, when people go to Stanley Park and you see the totem poles, they think that Vancouver is this great open accepting space, particularly with its Aboriginal people. Little do people know when they go to Stanley Park, do they realize those totem poles are not native to these parts? They're actually from up north. everybody just kind of jumps on board and thinks that that is the ultimate representation of the people within the local area.
Mm-hmm.
So you are a student, correct?
Yes.
And what are you currently taking?
I'm majoring in sociology, but I'm minoring in First Nations Indigenous Studies here at UBC.
And what moved you to decide on taking a course in First Nations Studies?
To take a course in First Nations Studies, well, I started at Langara College. I'm honestly not sure why I took an Indigenous Studies course. I guess I just took it out of interest at Langara, but when I became a part of the Indigenous Studies program at Langara and took that course, I started realizing that I had a lot in common with the Indigenous culture. And in that time, I was so far disconnected that I didn't acknowledge my indigeneity. And so through that first course, I guess it was the stepping stone into me finding myself and reconnecting with my indigeneity. So as the course progressed, I resonated with my Indigenous peers. They talked about teachings similar to my own. They talk about connection to the land similar to my own. And although indigeneity was never recognized by my family because we had been so oppressed and conditioned to forget, I guess, our ways.
Now, you had mentioned people, Aboriginal people sharing their experiences.
Yeah.
That part I find very interesting. Now, it actually might lead up to my next question here, which is what aspect of Indigenous studies, or a course for that matter, with an Indigenous focus interested you the most, and why?
An aspect of Indigenous studies that I would say interested me the most was the sense of community that I felt amongst my peers and professors here at UBC, and the hope that this unity created for me to know that there were others that resonated with my ideals of equality and change for Indigenous people. And to give you an example, a course that interested me the most, I would say, was, I think it was a 400 or 500 level course with Len Coulthard. and it was Indigenous Social Movements. And this course was inspiring and truly resonated with me because it inspires students to not only understand the colonial paradigms, but to also recognize how Indigenous scholars and people are using discourse and action to dismantle colonialism. So for me in this course, I was able to better understand and see things from an Indigenous perspective and gain confidence in my Indigenous way of thinking and being. I truly think professors such as Glenn Coulthard are overlooked because he's truly an inspiring professor who doesn't just bring issues to the table, but he pushes you to dig deep and to think outside the box and provide solutions and strategies that work to motivate people. That was an aspect of Indigenous studies or a memory that I really have.
Absolutely. It sounds like it was on many fronts, an awakening, but an awakening in such an awe-inspiring way. You've made yourself a part of a community who recognize the issues, who want to find the solutions. And part of that community also includes teachers, great teachers. And this is a journey that has started with you back in Langara.
Yeah.
Langara is an awesome school, by the way.
Yes.
I was there to the transition from Langara to UBC. And then you go further down that rabbit hole, explore it a little more, and you really start cracking in on the specifics.
Yeah, and sorry, to add to that, you know, through those courses and those professors, I was able to embrace my indigeneity without being afraid anymore. And I was able to embrace my teachings, share those teachings, and make change. And I think a lot of the time, you know, our Indigenous community here at school and the professors that do participate in our courses are overlooked.
So could you say that, culturally speaking, for some people or for you, cultural awareness within, it was never really lost. If anything, it was just dormant.
Yeah, it was oppressed. It was there. And that's why when I was telling you about Langara, that experience made me begin to question, why did I resonate with Indigenous people? Why did I have so many things in common? You know, why were my teachings similar? So I began to question who I was, you know, and then you go through that process of, you know, self-revolution, embrace your indigeneity. Yeah, and it does become dormant because we're conditioned to make it dormant because the system associates being indigenous with shame and negativity and something that you shouldn't be proud of. But it's the opposite. We should be proud of it and we should embrace it.
And when you talk about the system, you're talking about
the state, the structure, the framework that we live in that promotes a colonial narrative that works to oppress indigenous people in various aspects.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Shifting gears here now, I'd like to ask if you can share a lesson, reading, or a guest speaker who had a particularly significant impact on your views of Aboriginal people.
Okay, so a lesson which I recall had a particular impact on my views of Indigenous people in my second year, where I was taking a 200-level course of sociology on Indigenous perspectives. My professor was doing her PhD. It took place in Guatemala, and it was about the Quechi Guatemalan Indigenous community who were in a constant battle with Hudbay Minerals, a Canadian mining company that was destroying their lands, and it was very violent for the people. And what I recall in this particular lesson was that she showed us a film that she took part in. And the film was called La Defensora, which translates to The Defense. And there's a Mayan Quechi woman named Angelica Chuck took it upon herself to become the leader in this struggle. And she's a woman. And so I was still coming into being in this process. I still didn't acknowledge my indigeneity. And she shows us this documentary, and I feel through this lady's words and just her appearance when she talks about how her husband was killed in front of her son by security that was hired by Hudbay Mining Company, and how she had lost her husband. And in that instant, I feel her pain and I feel her sadness. And I remember I didn't understand why I felt that. I didn't understand why she resonated so much with me. And I was fighting back the tears in class, I remember. And we finished watching that video and we finished that lesson. I remember going home and sitting on the couch and crying, profoundly crying, because I felt as if an injustice had been done to my family. And I didn't understand why. And so it was here where I called my father for guidance to tell him and ask him why I felt so sad and why the atrocities that were cast upon this community in particular impacted me so profoundly. And he said, in simple terms, it was because a part of me was Indigenous. And so even though they weren't my people, in a sense, they were still my people because they're Indigenous. And it was this moment in my life, I guess my moment or epiphany of realization that changed my entire perspective, that allowed me to embrace my indigeneity. And I got angry. They may not be Mapuche, but they're still my people. And so I realized that I had been conditioned to overlook that through the colonial constraints that were in my environment, where my people, I guess, were hidden. And as you said before, my indigeneity had become dormant. But in that moment, it was revived. That lesson would now change my life forever. And I think that was one of the biggest lessons that changed my perspective on how I viewed the world. Because now I was not only seeing it from that one constraining perspective from the colonial side, but I was seeing it from my side, from where I truly came from. And so that was a life-changing moment for me.
Definitely a huge connection for sure.
Yeah.
It just became blown wide open like right there. That must have been really powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and I can relate, but we do not have that time to get into my background on this. But you couldn't hear me, but I've been nodding the whole time you've been speaking. And I really thank you for sharing that with me. Is there any other lessons or readings?
Lessons, readers, or speakers. There's been so many. Taiaki, Alfred, was very influential. But before Taiaki Alfred, I would have to say a reading that changed my life was by Lee Miracle. And it was her oratories. I'm not sure if you remember the name. Memory Serves. That's what it was called. And it was, I took that in Glenn Coulthard's social movements course where he selected readings for each of us to do, and mine happened to be Lee Miracle's Memory Serves. And through that reading, I found myself in her words, in her book, not only as an Indigenous woman, but in the teachings that she spoke about, in the way that our perspective of viewing things, but from an Indigenous point of view, in the way that we learn, in the way that we're taught, and in the way that we're even disciplined by our parents. It's just, it's an entirely different dynamic from the colonial dynamic on how people, you know, it's always very structured. You know, we have to learn in a certain way, and we're confined to that and these forms of learning. And in her book, what truly resonated with me is as a child, I was very visual. And my learning from my grandpa was not something that he was like, this is how you do it. It was kind of like, this is how I do it. You can watch me and you learn on your own way. And so going back to, you know, my elementary years, because I had a different way of learning and I had a different way of seeing the world, I was told I was going to be pulled out of my math class and put into a special program for special needs kids who don't understand math. But for me, it wasn't that I didn't understand it. It was that I learned differently. And in Memory Serves, she has this part in it where she talks about her struggle in math as a child. And that, you know, her teacher puts beans in front of her. 2 minus 1. Or 3 minus 2 is one. It's supposed to be one. But Lee Miracle would answer that it was 3. Because in her perspective, just because you were taking 2 beans away did not mean that they didn't exist. And then in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, you know, this was me. This was my childhood, my life. I didn't see the world like they did. That was one of the readers that truly resonated with me and supported my way of viewing, the way of viewing that was a constant struggle for me, because I learned like an Indigenous person learns. I learned how my grandparents taught me and my parents taught me, and not in a structured system, you know, confined to not question. For me, it was an entirely different world of learning, and through her book, I saw that, you know, I saw even in the way that her father disciplined her, that at sometimes he would just stand there silently because that was their way of, you know, maybe I needed to yell, maybe I needed to be angry. And I recall my dad doing the same thing. So in her book, I saw myself, and it allowed me to reconnect with myself. And then we had to give an essay in Glenn's class or a presentation where one of her key sayings in Memory Serves was, I will tell you my story different but the same. So she's saying that, like, we have a different perspective of viewing the world, and it's a different way, but it's still the same. And although we don't follow the same structures, it's still the same, and we end up in the same end. That's what it meant for me, and so I really saw myself in her book. It even made me aware of how colonized my grandparents were. And my grandpa, it took me back to the moment where my grandpa used to talk to us at the table and tell us his stories, and how my family was so disconnected that my uncles would just get up and leave and not value the weight that these conversations held. And I stayed out of respect, but also because it was important. Like, what he was doing was passing that knowledge on to me. And I valued it. So that was a huge part of me coming into my being. Lima Rockwell had a huge impact on my life.
That's amazing. What I find so interesting and so powerful about what you just shared there was you go through a reading, and then through the process of that reading, the memories of your grandfather come up in the back of your mind, and you start remembering the things that he shared with you. You're also remembering your father and how you used to go to him for support. And I think also that they're lending more weight to what Lee Miracle is saying, because what she's talking about is also coming from a place of experience. And what you're going through and reading is just amazing.
Yeah.
Heavier than gold.
Yes. So heavy.
Okay. Do you make use of your knowledge in Indigenous studies to inform or educate friends, family, peers?
Yes, I do.
And how do you make use of it?
I love this question because it's something that now I feel to educate others on Indigenous perspectives and viewpoints, I feel it's a little bit part of my mission. And my mission, I guess, to refuse the colonial narratives that have been constructed around us. And so I guess those opportunities for me are moments of refusal, part of my process of decolonization. For example, I had peers, other friends, and they would use the word Indian or Native. That was my first attempt at trying to educate friends on, you know, those aren't the proper terminologies that you should be using. It's offensive. And I knew that maybe they weren't listening or maybe they would take offense, but it didn't matter because if I could just plant the seed, if I could just make them think for that one moment, that at some point it would change them. And the funny part is that it has. My friends no longer use those terms, and that my friends now even correct other people when they don't use Indigenous, when they use Indian. And even if it's that minor change, I change them. And another example that I have is my fiance's stepfather. He's not open to Indigenous cultures. He's very close-minded, narrow-minded on Indigenous people, and he's been tainted by all the stereotypes that you can think of. I never stopped myself from giving him my perspective because the same thing, I know that even if I can make him think for a minute or reflect in a moment where he has to deal with an Indigenous person or Indigenous issue, I'm hoping that at some point he'll hear me, think of me, he'll be reminded. And it actually happened. There was a girl who came to apply for a job, and he told me that and normally he would have entirely overlooked her because that's the type of person he is. But in that moment, he told me that he heard his wife and he heard myself on his shoulder explaining to him the injustices that Indigenous people face on a daily basis, you know, how hard it has been to come back from colonization, how hurt our people have been. We continue to be oppressed. And he heard me and he hired her. And even though maybe that didn't work out for him for other reasons, I changed him. I made him think. And he became a better man that day. And that was because I didn't stop talking to him. Even if it was scary, you know, we had arguments over it, it didn't matter because as long as I could reach him, that was my goal. That's always my ultimate goal. And I think that these conversations are important to have, whether or not the other person agrees with you or not. They're important because that's how we begin changing people.
Absolutely. And do you have open-ended conversations with him today?
Definitely, definitely. I even told him after that happened, he became a better man that day. He grew. And maybe he didn't get a new employee or it didn't work out, but he changed. To this day, I have open conversations with him. And we'll argue and we'll disagree, but it doesn't matter.
That's great. As you mentioned earlier, you were part of a community at Langara.
Yes.
And coming over to UBC, I'm sure some of your classmates are here as well.
Yes.
And so I'm not going to ask you the obvious question if you've previously engaged with other Aboriginal people in educational spaces, but have you engaged with Aboriginal people in maybe a spiritual space?
Yes, I have. Not so much outside of school, but within school, yes, spiritually, with the community here of my Indigenous peers that we have. We make time for things like smudging. Maybe it's not my traditions, but it's still an Indigenous way of being and gives us strength to to move forward because being here at school sometimes is not easy.
I'm sensing there's a common denominator in all this.
Yes.
And you're talking about connecting. What makes it so strong? Is it feelings of love? Is it feelings of camaraderie? Is it feelings of being just a human being, not having to wear that colonial veil, I'll say?
Yeah. It's everything. There are feelings of profound love that I have. My Indigenous peers, they have become my family. Whether or not we're from the same nation or not, it's just a profound love that I hold for them.
Yeah, I hear that word coming through and over again with what you're saying. It is love. Mm-hmm. It does miracles if you just give it the chance. And I think that what is so profound is that all you have to do is open yourself up to experience it. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is enough to be connected.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Do you see education about Indigenous peoples being important to the relationship between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in Canada?
I believe that it is important. Through Indigenous-focused education, non-Indigenous people are exposed to the inequalities and the injustices of the colonial structure. And this awareness created by this type of education, as I said before, creates discourse amongst Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, which is beneficial because it does have the potential to ignite a relationship between non-Indigenous and Indigenous people. It's the start to having the conversations, to making them see what we see.
Absolutely. Conversations are so huge in wherever we are, whether it's in our social circles, whether it's with family, with friends, or even here in school. We have to kind of take charge of these conversations as well.
Yeah.
To keep them going, to keep people engaged, and not to shame people, but to inform them.
Mm-hmm.
And then in turn, they can learn something, and we can learn something back. And then it seems like we have to be the ones that also change the system from the inside out.
Yes.
Because from the outside in,
it's not. It's not going to happen.
There are barricades of people all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. At this time, I'd like to thank you, Tatiana, for coming on to the show. Thank you so much for your insight, your experience, your knowledge, and sharing with us a little bit today.
Yeah, Gracia May, thank you for having me. I hope that through my words, I inspired some people and you to change and I guess share my perspective of how I experienced education here.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. At this time, I would like to briefly summarize on the interview I had with Tatiana. She comes from Edmonton, Alberta, and also identifies herself as being from the Mapuche Nation, which is in Chile. Today, Tatiana is currently doing her major here at UBC in sociology, but she also is doing a minor in First Nations and Indigenous Studies. For Tatiana, she never really identified with her Aboriginal background. That is until she went on to take a few courses with an Indigenous focus at Langara College. And it was there that Tatiana met other students who had a similar disposition to hers, and eventually she began to experience change for herself. She made many connections with the Aboriginal students at Langara, many of whom she came to UBC with, and the culture inside that was once dormant has since revived and is currently flourishing within her. Right on, Tatiana. In this interview, I particularly liked her take on how she sees Aboriginal representation within Vancouver. In many ways, she's right. And although this is only the second interview, I'm already seeing a theme that is emerging from beneath the surface of all this, and it is people. You see, we can read all day long and still never reach the answer we seek. And there are two quotes I'd like to put back to back. They are, knowledge is fixed and knowing is continual. Once you're at the end of what you know, you'll be at the beginning of what you should sense. Where I'm going with this is books are fixed. Words within them never reorganize themselves. It is people who give and take meaning from them and continue on with their journeys. Sometimes along their journeys, words aren't necessary. Sometimes you can just sense what is happening around you. What I'm getting at is love. And you can't read love, can you? But you can feel it, right? I believe this is the place where Tatiana is coming from. You see, she's coming from a place of heart. Today, she's using her knowledge to change the perspective of people she knows with great success. And I have no doubt in my mind and my heart that Tatiana will move on in this world to do great things. And by the way, those two quotes that I was talking about, okay, well, the first part was from a martial artist, and the second part was from a poet. Bruce Lee, and Kelly O'Brien. And that's all for now. This is Chris Carl, your host of the Wolf Tracks podcast series right here at CITR. Wishing you the very best. Hi, hi for listening. XA.
You're tuned in to National Aboriginal Day special programming on CITR Radio 101.9 FM. CITR broadcasts from the University of British Columbia, which is located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. You just heard the second episode of Wolf Tracks, a podcast series created by Chris Cardinal through UBC's First Nations and Indigenous Studies program. Up next is episode 3 in the series. Hope you enjoy.
Saying, welcome to Wolf Tracks here on UBC's CITR 101.9 FM. I am your host, Chris Cardinal. Recorded, processed, and produced right here in the beautiful unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking peoples, this show is the third and final installment of a three-part podcast series addressing education. More specifically, I will be continuing conversations with guests who have taken at least one postsecondary course with an Aboriginal focus, and we will discuss their backgrounds, experiences, and their thoughts of how Indigenous-focused courses can be a positive factor in changing the current discord by facilitating a better understanding between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginals here in Canada. Now, moving on to the final chapter in the three-part Wolf Tracks podcast series, our third guest is Kate. First off, thank you for being with us here today, Kate. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, my name's Kate Bonza. I'm an exchange student here at UBC, and I come from Sydney, Australia.
That's a long way. How long have you been here in Vancouver?
Just since last September, so I'm just here for a year.
Here for a year. Do you find there much of a big difference between Australia and Canada?
Vancouver itself is very similar to Sydney, which is home. The people personality wise but nothing really matches the mountains though. Like, we don't have mountains, we don't have snow. It's that is different. That's really different.
Do you find Canadians more polite, or is it just one of those things that are branded on people from Canada?
I think they're very jolly and yeah, polite, very much like wanting to share a lot about where they're from.
Nice. And you had just mentioned that, how long you've been here in Vancouver for. It's been just a little over a year, sorry? It's
just under a year.
Just under a year, sorry. Where in Musqueam territory are you currently residing in?
So I'm residing in Point Grey at the moment, but I'm spending most of my time probably, I'd say, like on UBC campus. And yeah, I actually am lucky enough to live down in Point Grey. The Musqueam name for Point Grey?
You know, that's a great question. I should know this, but I don't. However, if it's any consolation, I do know that based out of an anthropology class I took here at UBC, where the Rose Garden is, it was once a historical and ancient lookout point where the Musqueam people would overlook the water and see the people coming and going, either friendlies or hostiles, on the water coming towards land.
Okay.
Moving on here, Kate, do you see Vancouver as a multicultural space?
It's diverse, but I think it's very segregated. I notice that a lot even at university. I think especially with even just how the city downtown is set out, just with like, I guess, enclaves of different communities. I think what is noticeable and what's also people have spoken a lot about is the divide between Vancouver's Chinese population as an example of that. And then, of course, the First Nations community in Vancouver. Diverse, yes, but especially when it comes to Vancouver's Indigenous population, I can see, I'm almost like, I guess from studying here now, just like hyper aware of like the segregation.
Absolutely. I was just going to ask you, you kind of set up the next question, actually. I wanted to ask you, how do you see Aboriginals represented here in Vancouver? Now, you obviously see the artwork at MOA, UBC, YVR, the Aquarium, etc. But do you see Vancouver as being a proper place of representation of the local natives that live here?
And first arriving in Vancouver, before I'd started any of my classes, I was surprised at how much Indigenous artwork there was. Also, coming to UBC the first time, seeing the totem poles, and yeah, it was just very different to at home, where, for example, I didn't even know the Aboriginal country. Just to preface that, in Sydney, or in Australia, Aboriginal is the politically correct term for our Indigenous people. I didn't even know that Aboriginal country that my university was situated on. It's never acknowledged. So I was surprised in that respect. It was different to at home. But as I came to study here and learn more, I very much realised how those artworks and the totem poles and various signs of First Nations art around, they were there, but there was no effort to make a connection to those pieces of artwork and the surrounding environment. It's almost like they were just put there to say, hey, it's there, but they were very disconnected from the surroundings.
For sure. When people travel in and around Vancouver, including North Vancouver's Capilano Suspension Bridge, tourists and visitors make a connection that Vancouver is this friendly space toward Aboriginal peoples. But the real histories of dispossession are rarely, if ever, talked about. For example, one of Vancouver's early stories is the Irony of Stanley Park. Now, one of the last settlements there where Native people had lived was actually burned down by Vancouver's fire department back in the day, if you could believe that, to pave the way for and to make space for settlement. Anyways, I digress.
That's very relevant.
You were saying that you're an exchange student. Were you taking Indigenous studies in Australia?
Yeah, I also study law at home, so I do too. But the Indigenous studies subjects offered at home, my degree doesn't allow me to do many. But this is the first time that I've ditched the law, ditched kind of everything, and have just solely focused on First Nations and Indigenous studies. The courses offered here are so specific. Like, for example, this semester I'm taking with you, so theatre and Indigenous studies, queer Indigenous studies. Last semester I did Indigenous new media and Indigenous geographies, and I've just the specificity of the courses here, opening my eyes to like intersections of Indigenous studies and like gender studies and media and theatre. Like, these are just kind of connections that haven't been offered at home.
Yeah, that is amazing. They do offer a lot of courses here. I myself, being here a student at UBC, it put me in a dark place for a while, just the content that I was learning. I walked away with a lot of whys, a lot of questions. Well, why is this like that? And how did this come to be like this? And then you come to slowly realize, myself speaking as an Indigenous person, that there's a reason why those silences are not shared with you. Or at least in my case, how they weren't, because the way I see it now is that those stories were not shared with me to save me from a burden that I could do nothing about, because it had already had passed. The damage had been done to whoever was withholding that story from me, but going forward, it still affected me, indirectly. One of those things that definitely cost me was learning my language. These days, I realize how important language is, and I totally struggle just trying to get back to it. But that being said, it's a work in progress. It is happening. I think I know twice as much Cree as I did 2 years ago, so I'm making strides.
Can I ask you questions?
Sure, yeah, you can ask me a question, sure.
I was going to ask, when you first came to UBC, were you taught by Indigenous profs or not?
I would say it was a combination of both. I was actually an exchange student from Langara College. There was a mix of both Indigenous and non-Indigenous teachers there, and there I learned basically the generalities of what the program was all about, contemporary issues, a little bit of history and law. And then coming to UBC, this is where it started getting into specifics, or what a prof who I call Dr. J from Langara said back in the day, He says, you know, this is where those brick-and-mortar institutions is where the rubber is really going to hit the road. And this is where I learned the specifics of what really happened here in Vancouver. And to learn about it was just appalling. At first, I felt like I was put in a place where I was really questioning a lot of things. I pulled myself off Facebook. I became kind of a recluse, and I sort of felt like this education that I was now carrying was like, okay, well, you have the information now. Now what are you going to do about it? And I had to open up to somebody about this, and they gave me the best advice I think I could ever hear at that time. They said, you know what? It's not for you and alone to figure it out. You're going to find the people and work at this together. And since then, I've been making strides. I've been coming back to my own normal self. And it's not to say that those memories of how I was when I first got into university have been forgotten. They're definitely still there. But I would like to think that I'm making strides now and that I'm really connecting with the right people. And for some reason, there's a switch inside my mind. When I hear something, it either goes on or goes off. What is relevant? What is irrelevant? And I think it really goes off more when I'm outside of school. Because being in school, we learn to deconstruct everything outside the classroom. So I don't know if I answered that question
for
you.
No, you did. Wow.
Thank you very much. Maybe I can ask you a question now. Kate, I wanted to ask you a question of what aspect of Indigenous studies or a course with an Indigenous focus for that matter interested you the most?
Probably what has challenged me the most and interested me the most was my... Last semester I took a gender and indigeneity course, and this semester I'm taking queer and two-spirit Indigenous studies with Daniel Justice. And as like a queer identifying woman myself, I learnt so much, and I think I've been on like the edge of my seat in those classes more than anything else. Maybe because gender is something that I grapple with and struggle with. I think something that came up last semester and that I kind of, I guess, stuck on was the concept of like allyship in those situations, being a white settler, queer woman, wondering how I position myself in relation to the queer and two-spirit Indigenous writers and authors that I'm dealing with, even my professors and other students in my class. I know I'm not alone in struggling with how to position myself and like what my responsibilities are, how do I stand in relation to these people, and at times, identifying with experiences and feeling shared experience with the Indigenous and Two-Spirit authors, but at the same time, not, because I will never know what it's like to be an Indigenous person because I'm of settler origin. So it's just this massive tug-of-war in those classes, which has been so important for my learning and my thinking, and I'm still grappling with it. But that's what's really cool about having professors like Sarah Hunt and Daniel Justice. I think when I've come to them with these questions, they're like, the important thing is that you're asking the questions, keep asking those questions, and keep talking to us about it, because they're important, and the questions are the important part of that. There often isn't an answer, but the questions are the important part. So that's probably my like favorite and most important thinking and learning, and still thinking about it, you know. Yeah.
Yes. You said something earlier in the interview. You talked about coming to Canada and that you experienced Canadians as being jolly. Now, you being from Australia and being a white settler queer, do you find the treatment different to being here in Canada as opposed to back in Australia? Or are there similarities?
I can only really speak from Vancouver experience, but Vancouver has been a place where I feel like I've been able to express myself. Australia is very backward in the treatment and relationships with Aboriginal people. Australia has similar, like, maybe on par at times, track record to Canada. I still sometimes just sit sometimes with my head in my hands studying, you know.
So when you say norm, what I hear you saying is that there's a certain treatment of people that do not fit social conventions?
In Australia?
Yes.
Yeah. Australia is, as much as people think it's this cool, everyone gets a go kind of country, Australians are incredibly closed-minded. We're very isolated from the rest of the world. I think that's probably something to do with it. For example, Australia, gay marriage isn't legal in Australia. Like, people get just shocked by that, and our Indigenous communities are treated incredibly violently, I guess, like on par to Canada.
Yeah, it is definitely something else for sure. moving ahead here, you'd mentioned Sarah Hunt. You had mentioned Danny Heath Justice. Is there a lesson, a reading, or a guest speaker that you had in your education here that have significantly impacted or shaped your views of Aboriginal people?
I was going to say those two, Sarah Hunt and Daniel Justice. My favourite part about the classes with Sarah Hunt and Daniel Justice, speaking about, and I loved also reading their texts, so that was your question about the text. There was a specific article by Sarah Hunt. I don't know why it slips my mind now. Did I write it down? Just reading articles by Sarah Hunt and Daniel Justice that speak about just them just speaking. They're some of my favourite ones. It's, I think they're really important articles to have in an academic learning environment. Ones that aren't necessarily like scholarly, quote unquote, but just voices offering their life experience. Be my favourite.
For sure. I don't remember exactly where I heard this, but I heard something and it was very interesting. It was something I see played out over and over again, particularly in some of my meetings with people that I know. And that is, once somebody figures out what someone else's gender is, if it is something that does not fit the socio-norm, you know, the things like you're supposed to be like heterosexual, you're supposed to have a job and be involved in some kind of activity, like that sort of thing. And that as soon as you're identified as being something outside that norm, it may be because you are gendered, it may be because of the color of your skin, all of a sudden you almost feel it. Now there's a shift in their whole attitude towards your disposition or your being. And they don't even have to say anything. All you have to do is just see it in their body language. Now, for myself, being a person of color, being Indigenous, that is something I'm very hypersensitive to, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to it as well. It's called the color line. As soon as someone uses language like us and them, the language starts to form, and if it doesn't get corrected quickly, it can get out of hand. And it's very uncomfortable. And sometimes it gets to a place where you're backed up into a corner, where you have a lot of people talking against you, and they expect you to be the spokesperson for everybody. And they have a stance like, okay, you're talking for everybody who you represent. What about this and what about that? You may answer one question, and you may say that you're only speaking on behalf of yourself, but you always seem to be fighting an uphill battle and always getting attacked. I find that to be a pretty big problem here in Canada, and it's a shame that that is. But out of experience, that's definitely what I've seen. And some people I knew in the workforce, they would either go silent, turn or walk away, act like they didn't hear anything the moment my position was questioned. And the position I was coming from was obviously a position of color. When you share education with people outside of school, whether they're peers, friends, family, about material that you learn here at school, what is their response? Are they open to it? Do they engage you with it? Do they say something and shut it down? How do they respond?
I was actually talking about this with a few of my Australian friends who did last semester with me. They also came and studied in FNIS. We're talking about how we respond with, we're studying First Nations and Indigenous Studies. People are like, oh, why are you studying that? Like, it's just like a facepalm moment because you're like, oh, okay. But it's really hard to engage with people about it because sometimes people aren't willing to engage. Sometimes it's too hard. Sometimes it's even hard for people just to acknowledge their whiteness, which is something that was really big that came out of this course. I was talking to my dad the other day and on the phone, I'm like, Dad, I don't think I've ever looked in the mirror until coming here and studying in First Nations and Indigenous Studies and like noticing my skin colour. And I know that sounds really weird because it's something that's so physical and it's there all the time, but never in my education have I had to acknowledge my like white settler, like non-Indigenous heritage every single time I speak in a class or introduce myself or present something. And I think that's been huge, just being aware of, I guess, my whiteness. No learning institution has ever pushed me to acknowledge that as much as here, which is big.
Yes. There's this documentary by Michelle St. John. She called it Colonization Road. In this documentary, there's this man asking two women on the street if they knew something about colonization, if they recognize it, and if they even recognized Canada as having a history of colonization. He starts off by asking one young woman, who I'll call Woman One, this question, and she looks really uncomfortable, and she seemed like she didn't want to answer the question because maybe this question was too sensitive. So she turns to her friend, who I'll call Woman Two, and Woman Two seemed to know something, and then all of a sudden, woman one's demeanor had changed. She was able to speak a little more, and I found that really interesting. It was so subtle, but it was just one of those things that I noticed. Did you notice that happening in there?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, definitely. Though talking to those two girls was definitely a very telling part of that documentary.
Yes. So I think going forward, we have to create those spaces where we can have those conversations. And you're right. A lot of the things that we do learn are cutting edge. And what I believe at the end of the day is we are learning. And yes, we do learn the history. And sometimes it is a lot to take on, for sure. But at the same time, we are learning what is happening here right now.
Exactly.
Maybe we can traverse some of those interests and start introducing some core values. I think once we introduce some meaningful values and where they come from, now I may be going on a bit of a tangent here, but to realize that we are human beings with capacities to love, to feel, to think, to process things, and to share, I believe we'll come to the moment of realization of finding that outside color, there isn't really that much of a difference at all. I believe we will all find there's a lot in common, and these are values we should be embracing as a society. But I better not go too much further on that because, I can go on for a while.
No, I think you're definitely right on that. Yeah, it's actually really good hearing you put that into words. I think that's quite hard to capture a lot of the time.
Thank you very much. Have you previously engaged with other Aboriginal people in a social, education, or a spiritual space?
Last year, I went to a predominantly Aboriginal community in Western Australia in a town called Broome, which is so northwest, and Broome is home to the Yaru people, and it's in the area of Australia called the Kimberleys. So you've got like the red dirt, beautiful turquoise seas, and the white sands, and the beautiful baobab trees, which have these big trunks, very distinctive for the area. Up in Broome, one of the biggest parts was just the friendships I made there. Fishing is a really big part of life in Broome, so after work, we'd, some of the Yaru men and women working with me, go out and fish in the evenings, we'd fish on the weekends, and it was really amazing getting to meet people. Fishing involves a lot of talking and waiting, and it was often sometimes storytelling, and it was really nice building relationships that way. They're really special relationships that definitely hold on to for a long time, yeah.
I'm assuming you didn't feel vulnerable at all. You're totally at peace with everything.
No, not vulnerable probably is not the right word, but I was at the start, I definitely knew that I was coming to a Aboriginal community as a white law student from Sydney, which comes with its own complications because Broome is a place like many Aboriginal communities in Australia where my privilege of tertiary education is something that is just due to the lot of social issues in Broome and the obviously just as we learn here, just that legacy of colonialism playing out across our Indigenous communities. But I brought that with me a lot and was very, very conscious of, especially other women I was working with who were almost my age. I was thinking about that a lot. But also being in a Aboriginal community where the majority of the population is Aboriginal and it's,
So you go to this Indigenous community, and what I want to know is, what was the greatest experience that you came away with? Was it a feeling of balance, a feeling of calm? Was it a memory of good people that you had obviously met? What was that like?
I think probably the last one, definitely. There were two women there who I came particularly close to. We would fish on the weekends and we'd go to a Yaru site of quite a lot of significance. And I think the most important parts for me were listening to these two women tell story. We'd be fishing on a beach and off the rocks. Yeah, just sitting and listening and having them point out the land around them and telling me how their grandmothers would how the land used to be, what it used to look like and how, and you would literally just point out around them and show me the movements of their family across this land and telling the stories of their families, especially in like the periods of assimilation and a time in Australia called the Stolen Generations, which was the removal of children from Indigenous families. And listening to stories and learning those stories, being entrusted with those stories, was huge. And I think it really only hit me when I got back to Sydney how, and even coming here and hearing other Indigenous voices speak about the importance of story. I think just that was probably the biggest thing for me.
You said the word trust. Now, trust, going back, you know, is one of those core values that cross cultures. It's definitely something everyone and anyone can benefit from. But a lot of people today are hemmed into a certain way of thinking, a certain box. You know, whether you gender this way, or you're a person of color, or you're from here, or you're from there, you know, these social fabrications take hold, and unfortunately they don't mold into anything nice. They actually do quite the opposite. Do you see education regarding Aboriginal people being important to the relationship between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people here in Canada?
Definitely. 100%. I think that for Canadians, I think education needs to start from as soon as children are in school, learning about whose land that you walk on and share things on. And I think that's super important to the relationships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people in Canada. Same thing goes for Australia, I'd say. And what would it look like? Yeah, I think mandatory. I think also in university, I don't think there is really an excuse not to engage, no matter what, no matter if you're in sciences or arts or law. I think every discipline, there should be at least a course. Yeah, a course. Although I know that brings its own complexities with it as well. I guess then there's the question of what would that course look like. But yeah, I think the education needs to start early. It needs to be a long process. I think it needs to be a priority, mostly.
Yes, I definitely believe that as well. You know, for one thing, I think a lot of the stereotypes would be quashed in an instant, and that these stereotypes have been going on for far too long, and it's really time to change that model, and we can start seeing inclusivity start taking place.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, at this time, I'd like to thank you so much, Kate, for coming in today. Time seems to have really flown here at CITR, but thank you for taking the time out and coming in for this interview today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, at this time, I'd like to briefly summarize on the interview I had with Kate. She identifies herself as coming from the Euro Nation, which is in Australia. Demographically speaking, Kate told me it was in and around Sydney. Kate is a transfer student from Australia and has been studying here at UBC for just under a year. And although Kate has only been to Vancouver, I like her take on how she sees Indigenous representation in the city. She also shared some things with me I personally didn't otherwise know before our interview together. And one of those things she had mentioned was Australia Day. Similar to what I said in a previous podcast about an underlying theme, yes, Kate too seems to gravitate towards people when it comes to memories of both knowledge and sharing. And there is another thing that appears to be in common with everyone I spoke to in this podcast series, and it is that Aboriginal education in Canadian schools should be implemented to foster a better discourse between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in this country. Kate said it best that this Aboriginal education should start as early as kindergarten. My question to that is, why not? I had a lot of fun here in this podcast series, and because I was able to converse with people who share an interest in Aboriginal education, there were things they taught me I won't soon forget. In fact, I will always remember where they were coming from. They were all great people with bright minds and glowing hearts, and they reminded me of just how important our relationships are to each other, and how important it is to work together as human beings. I have no quotes for the end of this podcast, but I'd like to share with you a little story of why I called it Wolf Tracks. The wolf can be misunderstood as being dangerous, scary, and sometimes bad. However, through my teachings, wolves do work together and do their part in keeping with the balance of all things. With that, this is Chris Cardinal, your host of the Wolf Tracks podcast series right here at CITR, wishing you the very best. Hi, hi for listening today. Exe.
Hello, you are tuned in to CITR Radio's National Aboriginal Day special programming. CITR is broadcasting from the University of British Columbia, which is located on the traditional unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. My name is Eleanor, and I am the volunteer manager at CITR and Discorder magazine. You just heard the final episode of Wolf Tracks, a three-episode series created by Chris Cardinal as part of his First Nations and Indigenous Studies practicum program here at UBC. Over the past year, CITR had the pleasure of working with two practicum students, Chris and Tina, from UBC's First Nations and Indigenous Studies program. Both students spent many hours researching, writing, editing, and producing a podcast series, and today we're sharing them with our listeners as part of our National Aboriginal Day broadcast. Up next is the series Coming Into the Circle, a two-episode series created by Tina Alexis. This series looks at how universities such as UBC can better understand and support Indigenous students moving from rural areas to cities such as Vancouver to study.
Welcome to 101.9 CITR, UBC's radio station being hosted on unceded traditional territory of the Musqueam people. Tahuja Sabuzi Tina Alexis, Sa'apank is Sa'ama and Peter and Minnie Alexis, and John Neltane Chinalgia Nyahorasni, Ink is and John Keo I Musqueam Habilzan Etwa Debe Neltanathia, John Dakel Hodel E Yetatiltak, Satlana and Janasta and Tatiana Ahatatni. Hello, my name is Tina Alexis. My grandfather and grandmother are Peter and Minnie Alexis. I am honored to be hosting this radio series on unceded traditional Musqueam territory. Welcome to Coming Into the Circle. Thank you so much for listening. This series is being created in conjunction with the First Nations and Indigenous Studies program here at UBC and CITR Radio. So specifically, the series highlights how we could better support Indigenous students as they study away from home. In our classrooms, we talk about how we could better the lives of Indigenous peoples, displacements, colonization, and how Indigenous peoples throughout the world share the same issues. In the studio with me today is the beautiful Tatiana Zamorano. Tatiana is Mapuche from Chile. She is also Mestiza. Tatiana is a fourth-year student at UBC majoring in sociology and minoring in First Nations and Indigenous Studies. In this interview, I wanted to understand how Tatiana managed studying away from home with a theme of coming into the circle. Today, Tatiana and I are going to talk about coming into the circle, how to better understand and support Indigenous students as they study away from home. Tatiana, welcome.
Tina, thank you. Hello, and thank you for having me.
Tatiana. I know that you are Mapuche, Tatiana, with your homelands being in Chile. Can you tell the listeners the name of your nation?
My nation is called the Mapuche Nation. It extends across the Andes from Chile to Argentina, but what's unique about my nation is that we are not... We don't segregate ourselves into separate nations, even though we live in different parts of the Andes. We just go by the Mapuche Nation as just one big nation.
The Mapuche people have a proud history in asserting their independence, and knowing you, Tatiana, is proof that the Mapuches are strong, independent, and understand the importance of our connection to the land. And with that being said, Tatiana, do you have other family members that attend UBC now or in the past?
No, my mother did attend university, but at the U of A, but I am the first in my family to attend the University of British Columbia.
Good for your mom. The more people that pursue education, the better for our communities and for our people as we stand together. As for myself, my daughter graduated 2 years ago with a BSW, so technically I am the second. As a DACATH student, my experience of coming to university was challenging due to being separated from my family, culture, community, and language. Tatiana, I was just curious on what your experience has been in transitioning from your community to study in an urban area such as Vancouver.
My story is a bit unique in this sense in that I've been disconnected from my land since I was 29 years. So I never really had to transition because I've been disconnected for so long. And so obviously this happened as a result of state oppression. Being Mapuche in Chile has always been associated with shame, and so people refuse to identify as a Mapuche or even mestiza.
As a DACATH student, Tatiana, my experience of coming to university was challenging due to being separated from my family, culture, community, and language. What was your experience like transitioning from your community to study in an urban area such as Vancouver?
So my story is quite unique in that I never really had to transition. I've actually been disconnected from my lands and my community for about 29 years now. And that was a result of my grandparents and my parents becoming disconnected with their indigeneity at a young age. Because in Chile, being indigenous, like in many places, was associated with negativity, you know, the stereotypes and just shame. So a lot of people didn't want to identify as Mapuche or Mestiza, and so our culture was kind of, or my identity was kind of lost and oppressed for a while. But that's not to say that I don't carry any teachings or traditions with me. Even though my grandparents and my parents were very colonized, without even knowing it, they still unknowingly practiced our indigenous teachings and traditions, and that didn't matter where we were. So even though I was disconnected, I still carry a lot of the Mapuche ways and teachings, and I'm bounded to them even away from my community and lands. But yes, at times it was hard not knowing my land, not knowing the entirety of my people and my culture. But what got me through that was the culture and community of peers in my Indigenous studies, I guess, communities, because they became more than, and this is an important space to provide for students, because these peers became more than just friends to me. These peers became what I call in Spanish compañeros, which are my comrades. And those relationships for me really helped me reconnect with who I am, my indigeneity, reconnect with my lands. And they're more than just friends. These people are, when I say comrades, I'm talking about, you know, people that I would stand alongside and fight with, people that I would fight for, you know, just these intricate relationships that we have. Those were the things that really got me through and helped me practice my culture. And even if it wasn't my culture, I was still practicing Indigenous traditions, which really helped along the way. And, you know, we had that beating group with
Nicole.
Yep. And so that was all healing for me. That was me reconnecting with who I was. And yeah, so, you know, that transition is definitely hard, especially for me not ever even knowing, and for you having to constantly, you know, be here and then go back and then leave again. So for you is maybe a little more traumatic, since you have to go and leave something that you love. And for me, it was just not knowing. But it's definitely, you know, very important for our future peers that they have the same spaces and the same opportunities to build our culture and keep reconnecting with that.
Based on your experience coming to UBC from a different country, what do you see as the personal benefit of post-secondary education?
So as I kind of said before, well, the personal benefits for me from university, if I'm honest, I'd have to say that what I truly gained from university and having the opportunity to study here was that I was able to find myself as not only a person, but find myself and where I was rooted and reconnect with my indigeneity. And then, you know, yeah, the intricate relationships that we formed, those were also part of, you know, the personal benefits. And then just, I guess, like the tools that we acquire from our Indigenous studies courses are so beneficial in that, you know, it opens our minds and our hearts, I guess, to new perspectives and ideas, you know. And there's things that are important to have because we need them to be able to take them back to our communities and share them with others, so that, you know, in hopes to create change, and even if we can within the colonial system, I think it's important. And just university, if I hadn't come to university, I would have never met the people that I've met. I don't think I would have grown as much as I've grown now. And I think that my journey in reconnecting with my indigeneity would have taken me much longer than it did. Those are important things that we take from this, is that it's knowledge and wisdom and I guess a journey of the self that, you know, of coming into being, of us just reconnecting with ourselves, and that's, I think, a benefit that I will take and carry with me for a long time.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, and I think I share that same experience, because I always felt pressured to come to school because life was always so chaotic. There was always something going on at home or within the family, and I never knew what was going on until I came to school at UBC here and learned the history of our people, you know, the colonization. I learned about the residential school, the truth, in fact. I attended residential school and I didn't understand it, so being exposed to some of the literature and some of our discussions in class has helped me to understand and realize some of my struggles in my life and my family as well.
Yeah, and those are important because, you know, it forces us to question who we are and what's going on around us. And I think that if we, without these opportunities, we wouldn't be who we are right now, and other people wouldn't be able to have that coming into being journey.
Yes, absolutely. And I agree again, Tatiana. I think that it's important that we never forget that past. I mean, a lot of people always, you know, they always say, get over it, right? I mean, we can't forget the past, because that is the reality. And, you know, some of our people are still suffering today because of this.
Tatiana, although I know the answer to this question, I, of course, I've sat in many classes with you, but for the listener's sake, is integrating Indigenous viewpoints in the classroom important to you?
Yes, I believe, that, you know, integrating Indigenous viewpoints at the university should definitely be something that's mandatory in all faculties, because the Indigenous perspective exposes us to new history and current paradigm that's not constructed by the colonial canon. So, you know, they reveal the true first people's histories and the ongoing oppression that, you know, Indigenous people have to face. And, you know, the state's active participation in it, and an oppression that worked and still works to disconnect us from our lands, refused and still refuses our culture, and shamed and still shames us as a result of our race. And so the viewpoint, you know, it's important because it shows, you know, the impacts and the imposition that, you know, we had to suffer and still suffer. And, you know, if it's important as well because this, knowing this and acknowledging this, breaks down the colonial constructs and the settler privilege and exposes, you know, people to the colonial constraints that, you know, work to confine our brothers and sisters on a global scale. And it's something that should definitely be taught in our classes because it's important. Even professors, I think from all faculties, it's important that they are aware and acknowledge these histories and the Indigenous viewpoint. I have an example of a course that I took in art history. So one was taught by an Indigenous professor who heavily considered the Indigenous viewpoints and integrated the Indigenous culture. You know, she shared things with us that were important but cultural, and you know, and then there was things that she kept that were sacred and she wasn't allowed to share with us. And so, like, those are learning moments for students who are Indigenous, but even more so for students who aren't, so that they understand, you know, the parameters of the culture, the Indigenous culture. And then it was a great class, like, you know, and she created a safe space for us to have conversations, whereas I had another instructor and she was non-Indigenous teaching about Indigenous art and culture. And it was really hard. It was a really hard class to be in. She didn't consider the viewpoint. So there were a lot of misconceptions and and just in a negative perspective of Indigenous culture, of Indigenous people. And it's not correcting those conversations. It's not leading them to different places. And so in that class, you know, without the Indigenous viewpoint, it literally became a class where it was me and two of my other peers against the world, pretty much, which was, it's difficult to have to hear, you know, inaccurate histories, things being said about our people. And then for our professor to look for us to answer these questions because we're Indigenous. So why not, since they're professors, why not they understand that viewpoint? And that's because it's something that's not mandatory in our schools. And it should be. It's so important because, as I said before, you know, it deconstructs the colonial paradigm. And for us, it's essential because, it's just so important and essential that, you know, it's a part of our decolonization. The viewpoint is it's just crucial to have.
Yeah, I think as Indigenous peoples, it's our duty to speak out against that kind of information. When we hear things that are inaccurate, then it's our sole responsibility to speak out against it. Tatiana, One of my last questions is, what do you think is the difference between studying at home with family and studying away from home amongst strangers?
My life has changed immensely since attending UBC. As I said before, I guess, through these courses, inspiring Indigenous professors, this journey for me has been one of coming into being, finding myself and understanding who I am and where I come from, understanding the drive and the limits that I have. And ultimately, it has allowed me to embrace my indigeneity. And it has enabled me to look at the world from different perspectives and given me hope, as it's connected me with individuals that are just like me, who want to make profound, long-lasting change, and peers that want to tackle the injustices that we face. And it's just made me more aware of myself and the situations going on around me and the discrimination that Indigenous people face, not only here, but on a global scale, and that it's changed me in the way that I've also, in my coming to being, I've understood and accepted and realized the responsibility that we as Indigenous people and Indigenous individuals hold in working to change the discourses, the colonial discourses that are current, by challenging the notions. So in that way, yes, UBC has definitely changed my life.
Absolutely, I agree. I feel the same. My life has definitely changed since coming to UBC. Although I struggled throughout my educational journey, of course, caused by the separation from my family, my homelands, my language, I think that was the most difficult for me. And what I noticed changed for me is that I understand myself and who I am as an Indigenous woman. I also now understand how colonization has affected our people and still affects our people today. I think that coming to UBC has allowed me to open my heart to understanding and to take my role as an Indigenous woman more seriously. I am so sorry that we have run out of time. I know that Tatiana has a lot more to say. She is not only a good friend, she's also a comrade. Again, apologies, Tatiana. We'll have to finish this off at another time. And for our listeners, thank you for listening to this podcast, Coming Into the Circle, How to Better Support and Understand Indigenous Students as They Study Away from Home. You can also find the segment at www.citr.ca. The music you heard in this podcast was Indian Girls, written by Westwood and Fontaine and performed by Eagle and Dawn. I'm Tina Alexis. Again, thank you for listening. I would say.
Tuned into National Aboriginal Day programming on CITR Radio 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia, which is located on the traditional unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. You just heard the first episode of Coming Into the Circle, a podcast series created by Tina Alexis through UBC's First Nations and Indigenous Studies Practicum program. Up next is episode 2 in the series. Enjoy! Hey-ya!
welcome to 101.9 CITR, UBC's radio station being hosted on unceded traditional territory of the Musqueam people. Dahuja Sabuzi Tina Alexis, Sapang Isama and Peter and Minnie Alexis, and John Neltene, Chanal Yanya Wadasni, Ink is John Keo E. Musqueam Habilsan, Etuadabe, Nelchanatia. And John Da Kel Hodel E. Yazatelthak, Sathana and Janastai Grant Alphonse Ahatsatni, Enink is Lana Cha, Neho Hodel E. Nebatlahadinla. Hello, hello. My name is Tina Alexis. My grandfather and grandmother are Peter and Minnie Alexis. I am honored to be hosting this radio series on unceded traditional Musqueam territory. Welcome to Coming Into the Circle. Thank you so much for listening. This series is being created in conjunction with the First Nations and Indigenous Studies program here at UBC and CITR Radio. So this series specifically highlights how we could better support Indigenous students as they study away from home. In our classrooms, we talk about how we could better the lives of Indigenous peoples, the many displacements that our people have suffered from, and many other colonizing factors that continue to plague our people today. In our classrooms, our amazing professors also teach us that it is important to stay connected to our cultures and our lands. And today, on the phone with me is Mr. Grant Philip Alphonse. Grant has shown through his hard work and dedication to his community how vitally important it is to stay connected to the lands and our culture, including our language. Grant is a respected member, leader, and educator of the Tsilhqot'in Nation, with his homelands covering a vast majority of the Cariboo Tsilhqot'in. Grant is also an alumni at UBC with a bachelor and master's degree in education. I have to say that I have so much respect for Grant, as all his accomplishments prove that it is all possible to walk in a good way, leading a healthy life, and against all odds, he has paved the way for many of us that have chosen academia as a way to better our lives. It is an honor and privilege for me to be interviewing Grant, I have to apologize in advance for the static that is common in phone interviews. I just wanted to say, please don't let that distract you from the main theme of Coming Into the Circle. So in this interview, I wanted to understand how Grant managed studying away from home with the theme of Coming Into the Circle, how to better understand and support Indigenous students as they study away from their homelands. First of all, and again, I want to say Chanal Ya Grant for taking time out of your busy schedule to sit and talk with me. I truly appreciate and respect you for all your hard work, your dedication to our language and our culture. Once again, Chanal Ya, and welcome to our podcast, Coming Into the Circle. Grant, please tell the listeners where you are from.
Again, my name is Grant Alphonse. The name of my nation is Tsilhqot'in. My community is Tsilhqot'in.
The Tsilhqot'in homelands covers a mass majority of the Cariboo Tsilhqot'in, and the Tsilhqot'in people take their connection to their land very seriously. I once heard a former chief say, we will fight until the end, even if it means dying for our land. So yes, and in all respect, land is important. And with that being said, Grant, do you have other family members that attend UBC now or have in the past?
Yes, quite a few have won through UBC Vancouver, and presently I have a nephew that is attending UBC in the Okanagan campus, and I've had other members attend over the years there as well, so both Vancouver and the Okanagan.
That is so awesome to hear, Grant. I too believe that the more of our people that pursue education, the better for our communities. My daughter just graduated 2 years ago with a BSW, so technically I am the second, and my family is my immediate family. There are seven of us, and yeah, so the statistics are pretty low. As a DocCat student, Grant, my experience of coming to university was challenging due to being separated from family, culture, community, language. I just wanted to know, Grant, what was your experience in transitioning from your Silk Road territory to study in an urban area such as Vancouver?
I did find it difficult being separated from family to live in Vancouver to attend post-secondary, especially as during this time I lost both my parents and several other close family members. There, of course, is the culture shock of such a different environment from country to city. No one to speak my language with, and so many other little differences.
Yes, I truly believe that is important, to stay close and connected to our community, to our language, to our lands and our culture. And I completely understand how it feels when I see an Indigenous or Dakath person, I automatically want to start speaking Dakath. I mean, hearing and speaking Dakath is definitely one of the things I miss the most while being away from home. And I know for myself that being raised by my grandparents and being on the trap line, oral tradition was a big part of my upbringing. So a lot of the values that I carry with me today are based on those oral traditions. And yes, so I will keep those teachings close to my heart. And of course, I will pass those on to my grandchildren. With that being said, Grant, based on your experience coming to UBC, what do you see as a personal benefit of post-secondary education?
Personally, I see benefits of post-secondary education in the way I am able to integrate our Tsleil-Waututh traditions and beliefs into Western teachings.
Is integrating Indigenous viewpoints in the classroom important to you?
Extremely important. I believe we can apply our viewpoint everywhere, because it is exactly that, our viewpoint. Everyone's perception is colored by the environment they grew up in. I believe it is essential for everyone in their educational journey to learn the various Indigenous viewpoints. In our community, I work to ensure our children are learning Tsleil-Waututh language, culture, and more.
I read Grant's master's thesis, Decolonizing and Reclaiming Tsleil-Waututh Identity Through Storytelling, and I want to say that I too strongly believe that what is important to sustain our culture and our identities can be done through storytelling, oral traditions. What stood out to me, Grant, in your thesis is the connection of the land and the language and how essential it is to have a spiritual connection. I know that as Indigenous peoples, our land is who we are and is a resource that will sustain our people for a long, long time. I have heard an elder say that without the land, we are nothing, and without the people, the land is nothing. It is of utmost importance to take our responsibilities of stewards of the land more seriously. Now, Grant, has your life changed since coming to UBC?
Life certainly has changed. I've met many people from various places all over the world. My belief in my own Tsleil-Waututh culture has strengthened and deepened.
And I think what I noticed change for me is that I understand myself and who I am as an Indigenous woman. I also now understand how colonization has affected our people and still affects our people today. I think that coming to UBC has allowed me to open my heart to understanding and also to take my role as an Indigenous woman more seriously. What do you think, Grant, is the difference between studying at home with family and studying away from home amongst strangers?
Well, it depends on what you are asking with this question. Do you mean during holidays or a program that allows you to stay at home like an online program? Some clarification on what you really want to know for this question. However, there are both benefits and detriments to being at home in your home community. You have a better support system in place at home, but it's so much easier to be distracted from your study path as well.
That is so very true, except I never really saw it that way. Perhaps missing my spiritual and cultural aspect plays a big part of that. I know that having an unbalanced wheel sometimes makes it difficult to see the whole perspective. I think for myself, I just felt so obligated to go to school. It was almost like attending the residential school all over again. What I mean by that is, personally, I felt like I didn't have a choice. It felt like in order for me to live a healthy, happy, and normal life, I needed to understand why there was so much chaos in our lives and in our communities. Coming to school has helped me to understand why we face the difficulties, and just knowing what our people have gone through now since coming to university is very eye-opening. It makes you stronger, considering the fact that they tried to do away with our people, considering the history. I mean, we're still here, we're still alive, we still have our culture, we still have our language. Really, really proves that we are a resilient and strong people. Grant, as a DACHEL student, I understand coming into the circle to mean the process of creating and finding a supportive, understanding, and culturally safe community. I just wanted to know, Grant, what does coming into the circle mean to you as an Indigenous person?
To me, it means entering into a place where we are all looking for that sense of balance, where we look to balance the mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical sides of ourselves. Within this group, we find assistance from others to achieve this balance, and in turn offer assistance to others to help them also achieve this balance.
Absolutely. What Grant was talking about is the medicine wheel, what we had discussed a little bit earlier. For the future students, it is important to keep the mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical aspects in balance. Grant, I just wanted to know what you think would be the easiest and most efficient way to study away from home, again, keeping our future Indigenous students in mind. When we answer that question,
to create that community of support systems away from home, the UBC First Nations House of Learning and the Vancouver Friendship Center both work very well towards this goal. However, further work toward unification of students is always helpful.
Yes, absolutely. Tuesday night powwows, and Wednesday night they have West Coast night at the Friendship Center, which is on East Hastings. And my last question, Grant, is do you have any suggestions that will make the next Indigenous students' transition of coming into the circle easier?
I think just making friends and adaptation is very important. You have to pretty much accept what you have in front. As Indigenous people, we are somewhat used to that. Adaptation is what we have been doing for a long time, and I think that's what one needs to do is, whether it's foreign to you, you have to quickly look around and adjust yourself to be healthy and happy and that sort of thing. Accept what is in front of you. The sooner the better, otherwise you'll be having a hard time adjusting.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. The sooner the better. I guess in closing, Grant, can you please elaborate on why it is important for us as Indigenous people to stay connected to our language, our communities, our culture, and, of course, the land?
Very important to have that in place, because land has always been there for us, and we are there to protect it and also to have the language in place, because the language is what defines everything: you, the land, and indigenous people of these areas. It's very important. Much of the language is tied into the land. So if you separate the two, it becomes very difficult. And I believe that is one of the reasons why colonizers still continue to work on that, to separate us away from our language and the land as well. If you have the three together, then you're connected. That's who defines you. It is very important to practice those and to sit and occupy these lands that belong to us as indigenous people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Grant. Thank you so much. Once again, it's an honor and privilege for me to interview you. Chanalya.
Chanalya, you too. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thank you again, Grant, and thank you to our listeners for listening to this podcast, Coming Into the Circle, How to Better Support and Understand Indigenous Students as They Study Away from Their Home. You can also find this segment at www.citr.ca. My name again is Tina Alexis. The music you heard in this podcast was Indian Girls, written by Westwood and Fontaine and performed by Eagle and Hawk.
Are tuned in to National Aboriginal Day programming here on CITR Radio 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia, which is located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. My name is Eleanor, and I am the volunteer manager at CITR in Discorder. You just heard Coming Into the Circle, a two-episode series created by Tina Alexis. Before that, you heard Wolf Tracks, a three-episode series created by Chris Cardinal. Both podcasts were created by these students as part of their First Nations and Indigenous Studies practicum program here together with UBC and CITR. You can find both podcast series available on the CITR website at www.citr.ca, along with all of the other content broadcast today. For more information about UBC's First Nations and Indigenous Studies program, you can visit their website at www.fnis.arts.ubc.ca. Stay tuned, there's lots of great programming coming up. Thanks.